Hi, I'm on with Scott Allen, and just thrilled for both of us to have the opportunity to chat about our books, The Little Book of Leadership Development from Scott and his co-author, and My 42 Rules for Your New Leadership Role. Scott, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Pam?
Terrific. Where are you right now?
You know, I'm in Cleveland, Ohio, actually sunny Cleveland, Ohio.
Really?
It's a change of pace for us.
I remember Cleveland from my consulting days as having the nicest people and the worst Chinese food. Is it still the same?
I think you hit it on mark.
Okay. Well, I'm here in today sunny Sunnyvale, California. We've had to consider changing the name over the past couple weeks, but now we do know it's June. And let's go ahead and dive in. Why don't you let people know, maybe who haven't listened to this podcast before, since you've been on before, let people know who you are and what you do.
Sure. My name is Scott Allen, and I teach in the Bowler School of Business at John Carroll University, which is one of the 28 Jesuit institutions across the United States. I am an assistant professor of management, and really my area of research is leadership development. And so about 4 or 5 years ago, I approached Mitch Kuzi, who teaches in the Leadership and Change PhD program at Antioch University, about this concept for a book, and we kind of took it from there. And how about you?
Well, so I am an executive coach. I have my own business, IdeaShape. I've been doing that for 11 years following a decade and a half or so in corporate strategy consulting and other leadership work. I've also been teaching in executive education programs, in their leadership program, and for a while was a guest fellow for many years at Stanford University in their Center for Leadership Development and Research. So people are hearing today from two people who are really passionate about helping leaders develop.
Exactly. And now what's the background on the 42 Rules?
So 42 Rules is actually part of a series started by a friend of mine, Laura Lowell, who wrote 42 Rules for Marketing. Had so much fun doing it, she pitched the publisher on creating a series with herself as the editor, and then turned around to people who she thought had something to say and said, do your book with me. So
great.
So that was the genesis, and I knew I wanted it to be about leadership. And when I thought about where I saw the pain points of leaders.
Exactly.
A lot of it is as they get started. And boy, is that a powerful time, those first few months, for setting yourself on a great path, you know, or creating some struggle that you have to work even harder to overcome. So I thought that that's where I would focus. And as well as reviewing the literature, because even though I wanted this to be easy to read, as your book is as well, I think we both took care to make sure that it was based on really sound research. And then interviewed just about 50 executives on what they had seen in people who started in their organizations, who had done well, and folks who had struggled, and what some of the differences were.
Well, that's great, and I really enjoyed the format. It's easy to get through, but it's filled with what is there is great content.
Thank you.
That really resonated for me.
Well, yes, Scott, I think we were thinking along similar lines. That
We were. When Mitch and I set out to do the Little Book of Leadership Development, it was really about how do we help leaders and managers, oftentimes younger, but it could be mid-career managers in their organizations, really develop leadership capacity in the people around them day in, day out, on the fly,
yes,
kind of going with the flow of the organization versus uprooting someone and having them go to a training for 10 days. And so we believe that, just simply by changing how you approach managing others or leading others and adding in or taking out a couple elements, you can develop leadership capacity day in, day out.
Yes. And let me start there with a few things that I wanted to note about your books, both so our leaders would have an experience, or our listeners would have an experience of the content in your book, but also just to call out some of the points that I think you guys you know, made very well and that are really important. And the first one I'd hit on is exactly what you talk about, that sending folks off to a program and then having them come back and just dive into their regular routine, you know, is one way to approach leadership development, but there are other effective ways. And in your, I don't know whether to call them rule 35 or chapter 35, you have transfer schoolwork back to your work, which is about how do you bring that knowledge that people gained off and away and bring that right back to the group. And to me, that worked right along with number 44, which is creating leaders and teachers.
Yeah, you know, I worked full-time through each one of my graduate programs, actually my undergraduate work as well. And so on a consistent basis, I had an opportunity to do papers, do research, work within the context of my organization and bring back what I was learning to that organization, sometimes the next day. And I think that was really some of the most valuable learning for me. That I could take some of what I was learning in theory and try and put it into practice. And we all know that that's a very difficult endeavor. The really pretty blue boxes in the textbook with the four or five words that sound awesome always don't necessarily work out that easily. But, you know, I think there's a lot of opportunity in organizations to really intentionally build in opportunities for people going to school to do some of their work and apply it to the work context. And then help others see what it is they're doing.
Absolutely. And what have you seen it do for a team or an organization when people throughout the group become teachers?
Well, I think that is a wonderful opportunity for others to try and influence and convey a message. That if they're trying to share a perspective or share a vantage point with others or share an idea or a thought, inherent in all of that is influence, and inherent in influence in many ways is leadership. And so I think to teach others and to influence others to see your way of thinking, to bring back your ideas and advance your ideas, that's perfect. That's a perfect practice field for leading others, for influencing others. So taking what you're learning in the classroom, applying it to your context, and then trying to help others see the importance of that, that's all good leadership development, in my opinion.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And at some of the places where I've consulted, where I think they do a really good job of this, just I'll take Genentech for an example. Some of the groups that I've worked with, they have a regular practice of if somebody goes off and, you know, does a 3-day workshop in this thing or another, that they come back and do a lunch and learn for anybody from the group who would like to come. And in some cases, that's the person's first presentation that they've done.
Exactly. And you know, it's a wonderful opportunity to challenge others in the organization to, on a consistent basis, be presenting their ideas in front of others, influencing others, and really taking that opportunity. And it doesn't have to take hours and hours. I mean, I read a great article, an interview with Bruce Avolio this morning in the Integral Leadership Review. And Avolio was talking about how they did leadership development with surgeons as they were prepping for the surgery. They had no other time to get to them other than when they were scrubbing up. Seriously. 5-10 minute intervention. And I think that's kind of the mindset we have to get out of, is that this all needs to take a ton of time. I don't believe that it does. But I think we do need to build in that time for learning.
You know, that's hilarious, because it's that example of the just-in-time surgery leadership development learning is, you know, it's consistent with the trend that I see probably more often in organizations of doing short video-based learning modules that people can do either in a sequence to gain depth in a field of knowledge or just as needed. Okay, I'm going to do a one-on-one with employees. Let me go look at the video on how to do a great one-on-one and go forward. So while I'll just say, as somebody who does more in-depth development of leaders, I think there's some methods of development or that really lend themselves to a longer format, to conversation among leaders in the organization, to facilitation, But not everything does, and that organizations have become more flexible means that they can really bring leadership development to folks in the organization who just didn't see that before.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, as I was reading your book, one thing that stood out for me, you talked about working with people who are new to the role, and I think number 15 really stood out for me, the show people how to work with you. That really resonated with me, and I can think of a few supervisors I've had along the way that would have been wonderful to know had they had that conversation with me up front, really making it explicit. We touch on it a little bit in our book when we talk about setting baseline expectations, but tell me more about that, because I think it really is a foundational tenet for any new manager, that you have to make these things explicit. You can't just assume others are going to know, or they'll learn kind of on the fly, or they'll be reading your mind.
That's right. I did a great interview for the Weekly Leader podcast a while ago, and then I followed up with another interview for the book with Stephen Aldrich, who is CEO of Posit Science and had been an executive into it for many years. And he really highlighted this point. And you know, yes, you don't come in and say, okay, we're going to do everything my way or whatever, but you do, since you are coming into a leadership role with some ways that you found efficient for running your group and some expectations of other people, wouldn't it be a kindness to let them know what those expectations are?
Well, and you know, we talk oftentimes when we discuss leadership development that common sense doesn't always equal common practice.
That's right.
And I think that's one very common sense suggestion, but I don't know that it always happens in organizations among all of the hubbub and work of the flow of the work in the day, that people really have the time or take the time to have those really important conversations.
And, you know, it can seem about something that's not that important, like leaving a cell phone out on the table while you're having a team meeting. But I have seen some leaders turn unattractive shades of red, later outside the room, just rail on team members that they thought that violated their unspoken expectations about how to manage external communications while they're in a meeting.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, that behavior right there really touches on another one of your 42 that will really quickly close down the channel to ferreting out the feedback, number 35. You know, I think it's just so important to really have a clear understanding of how you're perceived and really almost chip away, right? Because you have to really truly help people understand over time that you really do value their feedback. You might not always agree and you might not always be able to act on it, but that ferreting out the feedback so you have a real clear understanding of what's going on and what people's perceptions are is crucial to being successful. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, definitely. And I think many people, even in quite senior roles, VP, executive level, underestimate how powerful their even, you know, tiny
nonverbal
reactions to people's feedback, how that is amplified through their organization. So I shadow clients sometimes, and somebody in the group will say, well, you know, actually, I'm not clear on what you just said. Could you take us through? And the people go, well, I just, you can just check the email. And news ripples through their organization. Oh, never ask him to clarify himself.
Exactly, exactly.
And it's, you know, fairly easy stuff to turn around. I think if the person had thought about it beforehand, they would have said, oh, that's not the message I want to send. Let me take a moment, be patient with it. Maybe I have some responsibility in this communication. So that is often a really, I think, underestimated behavioral change for leaders that can actually make a big impact as to whether they hear what's going on in their organization or they don't.
Exactly. And you know, someone who has the reputation of not being open to feedback is really closing him or herself off to a lot of really valuable data that maybe won't be shared with them out of fear or any another number of reasons, but it's too bad when we see that happening.
You know what I'll do is I'll put a link on the podcast notes for this podcast. I have a one pager that's really simple. It's a flow chart. It's slightly amusing, but it really is serious about how to receive feedback. Of course, it starts with thank you at the top. and I have, you know, worked this through with groups of people, and they always have a good time doing it, but it helps them be aware of how they're responding when people bring this up. So I'll just make a note to myself to add that to our podcast notes. I wanted to turn to something that you talk about, which is related, which is in your chapter 4, Model Effective Confrontation. And it's drawn from the Thomas Kuhlman work, which I love to do work around. Why don't you tell us a little bit about why you think that's important in the context of leadership development to be effective in confrontation?
Sure. Well, you know, one of the first things we talk about in the book is making sure that you as a leader have your own shop in order. And if you have your own shop in order, then you'll be modeling a lot of really great behaviors for others. And there's a great psychologist named Albert Bandura who talked about social learning theory, and we won't go there right now. But how you behave is important, because all eyes are on you, the leader. And so what you expect and what you want from others is what you need to model. And we all know what it feels like when we've worked for a man or a woman who did not have their own shop in order, whether that's based on their ethical behavior or based on any other attributes that we can think of. But when someone doesn't have their shop in order, it's difficult. And so if you really expect others to model effective confrontation, and you want others in the organization to behave in that way, and to really be intentional about how they choose to confront others, because once you learn about confrontation, you learn that, or conflict styles, you learn that you have choices.
Right.
And I think it's individuals who are very intentional about the choice they make and how to confront are probably in many ways better off. You know, oftentimes in organizations we'll see people avoid, but that may just be a default of theirs. It isn't necessarily an intentional choice. Now, sometimes it's really important and a good decision to avoid the conflict.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean that one style always fits. So I think really making the notion of confrontation explicit, noting that this will happen, noting that we all do have options, and then modeling that for others, modeling effective confrontation, whether that's through your nonverbals or your verbals, like we just spoke of, you're going to be setting a tone for what's expected. And then when you expect that of others, you don't come off as a hypocrite and someone who isn't really modeling the way or walking the talk. But it's hard, right? You know, Pam, it's so hard to do this well.
It is hard. And I think leaders are now caught in this thing of, let's see, I'm supposed to be an authentic leader and I'm supposed to modify my behavior to suit situations. And the answer is yes.
Yes.
Say, which do I do? Yes.
You know, Rob, M. Scott Peck wrote The Road Less Traveled. I believe it was in the late 70s. And that book, other than Good is the Enemy of Great as the opening line of a book from Jim Collins, I really loved that opening of the book. M. Scott Peck had the opening line of his book, The Road Less Traveled, was life is difficult. And that always stuck with me. It was just a very powerful phrase. But you know, leadership is difficult. If you're going to do leadership well, if you're going to be an effective leader, it really is an art form, it's a skill, and it's not easy work, especially in today's organization with so much coming at you. To be effective day in, day out, over time, it really does take skill.
It does. And knowing when to apply what you're great at and when that would just be overusing what's right for you but doesn't have relevance to the organization. You know, when I was in the process of writing this, I had the opportunity to hear Carl Spetzler speak again, and I always enjoy hearing him. He's the head of Strategic Decisions Group. And he talks about it, and I put it in Rule 11 in my book, is that we have a tendency to drag problems into our own comfort zone.
Mm.
So if we're comfortable with analytics, we say, well, it's clearly an analytical problem. We're comfortable with thinking about strategies, like, oh, we got to look at our strategy, you know, on this. If it's we're comfortable with dealing with people problems. Well, you know, I think we really just need to get the people more on board. And it's so easy to do that. So I ask people to be really aware of and explicit about what they're great at, and then be equally explicit about what the circumstance needs, because sometimes, often, it's not what you're great at. And then you have to find somebody or muddle your way through, or you learn in the process and your team gets to see you learn. I'm always very admiring of excited for the teams of leaders who are willing to kind of come out as learners and put that learner hat on and say, you know what, I think this really is a strategic problem. And as you guys probably know, that's not my background. I'm a learner in that. And so let's figure out how we address that.
Well, exactly. You're creating space for other people to share their expertise or their knowledge and feel like they're involved and a part of the solution, which is invaluable.
Yeah, and it makes it safe for them to show up as learners too.
Exactly.
Because working with those teams where everybody thinks that they need to act like they know everything already,
challenging place to be, right?
Yeah. They're stuck.
You have to be good at everything all the time, and that's a tall order.
Yeah, a little ridiculous. I wanted to highlight another chapter or section in your book that I just see so many teams live or die by, and that's number 6, keep the troops in the loop. What got you going with that one?
You know, it's fascinating. I've had 2 or 3 individuals talk about this because they and their managers and organizations, and they attend meetings and then they go back to their desk and they forget to tell their team what it was that was discussed, the decisions that were made, the changes in direction, the new priorities. They get back to their desk and everything else takes over, and they forget to tell their team what's going on. And again, this comes back to common sense, but not necessarily common practice. That oftentimes a lot of information is shared with the management team or people in management, but that then doesn't filter down in an effective way. And so keeping your team in the loop and really having them know that you are an advocate, that you are there to keep them informed and engaged, builds credibility, it builds trust. When you have a team that does not feel that maybe their best interest is at heart, that they are a priority, that they can be a priority, we all know what that feels like, and that diminishes trust in the leader. And, you know, that can really be a huge challenge, because if people aren't in the loop and they're happening to find out everything through the grapevine, or through secondhand sources, you know, that can be really difficult.
It can, and it just dampens people's willingness to really work hard for the team on
exactly.
Something that the leader says, this is a priority, and people go out of the meeting, they're like, yeah, he's going to probably tell us next week that, you know, oh, we're not going to be doing that.
Exactly. So just wait this one out.
Yes.
The fat of the week. Well, and you know, one of the 42 rules that really, really stood out for me, and I think it's so important, is number 39 for you, which was mind your mood. I love the topic of emotional contagion. I'd love to hear you talk about that a little bit. You know, it's just so crucial to the lifeblood of an organization.
Yeah, and you've seen the research, Scott, and it's very compelling that we humans are actually really well wired to pick up on the mood, on the emotional state of people around us. What we're not very well wired for is to figure out which strategic initiative is causing that look of pain on their leader's face, right? We have no experience in this from, you know, berry picking and antelope running's days. And so people will make guesses, and those guesses are usually wrong. And so often people they're correct in thinking, wow, you know, Jill looks really stressed today. And then their brains are happy to make up a guess as to what that's about. And typically that part of the guess is just wrong. So if people are in the sway of some strong mood, whether it's maybe a personal thing that's going on or whether it's something related to the business at hand, you know, I first encourage people to do is to have a baseline of wellness so they're less likely to be buffeted. You know, they've had some sleep, they've had some protein, they're, you know, had a glass of water. It sounds, again, like the most basic thing in the world, but some leaders pride themselves on, you know, I went 10 hours meeting straight, never had a bite to eat. And you're like, yeah. Really? What was your decision quality in those last couple of meetings? But, so, you know, take some baseline care of yourself, number one. Secondly, to notice when this comes up, and with your expertise in emotional intelligence, you know, this is nothing new for you, but what are those things that I could notice, those cues from my body that say, oh, I'm angry, I'm tense, I'm excited but kind of jittery, or whatever it is, and then make some choices about it. I find for a lot of clients, their default choice is to try to suppress it, and you know, there's 10 years of great research coming out of Stanford Psychology that says when we try to suppress our emotions, first of all, we're a lot less good at it than we think we are. And secondly, it takes so much cognitive resources to dampen an emotion that we don't remember much of what was said. Mm. Which is why performance evaluations, you know, those big annual meetings where you go in and you're supposed to listen and thoughtfully respond to what your boss said, you know, most of the time people are busy suppressing their emotions because they don't want to look, you know, giddy, or more often, you know, chagrined or whatever it is. And they just don't remember what was said. So I encourage people to think about what would an appropriate expression of that emotion be, whether it's to go take a break and take a walk, whether it is to have some practice for themselves, whether it's just sitting and breathing for a few minutes, whatever helps them regain equilibrium. And then if they're still in a place where they're conveying the mood to their team, do them the favor of letting them know at least what it's not about, if they can't say what it is about. You know, I know I'm, you know, this is a tough day today, but I just want you to know it has nothing to do with your group. So if you see me or I'm distracted by this other issue that's going on, I'm aiming to keep my focus 100% here. But if you see occasional looks cross my face, it's probably about that other. So feel free to ask me if you think, you know, or I'm really concerned about this initiative that we have and what this, so if you you know, if you're picking up on that concern for me, you know, it's genuine. And I feel confident that we can figure our way through this. And that's why we're meeting today.
Exactly. And, you know, that can go back to show people how to work with you, right?
Yeah.
And it can also go back to ferret out the feedback that people feel like they can have a level of trust with you, that they can ask if there's something going on or if it's something they've done, or even in the space of you having those difficult experiences, they still feel that they can communicate with you. And, you know, again, all of that builds trust, and trust is fundamental to any human relationship. If I don't trust, then I put up barriers, I put up walls, I don't bring my whole self. And, again, we all know what it feels like to be in a non-trusting relationship. And I think a key fundamental tenet of an effective leader is building trust and maintaining that level of trust.
Right, which requires a high amount of skill.
Because you're right, if you don't make it explicit for them, they're going to insert any number of stories in their head as to what it could be. Yeah. Right?
Yeah. Our brains are very, very good at creating narratives and need only the tiniest bit of reality to go spin a story about it. Well, I'm really excited for leaders that they're going to have access to your book. I'm hoping that you'll tell us a little bit about, you know, where to find it, if you're available to speak on this. Just let people know how they can interact with this material and with you.
Sure. We have a Facebook page, and so we can, listeners can go ahead and go to Facebook and type in the Little Book of Leadership Development, and you'll find our page, and you can like it. And then there's an opportunity to read some articles that we post. We'll post podcasts that we're doing, and just a number of other resources will be posted there. The book can be located at Amazon.com, and we'd encourage you to take a look there. And, you know, I think, of course, we're available for speaking engagements, Mitch and I both, and anything we can do to get the word out, because we really do believe that organizations filled with leaders working at a higher capacity will be more effective organizations. But I think we need to get more effective about how we develop leadership in our organizations, and it needs to be a fundamental tenet, not an add-on, but a going with the flow of the organization.
So it's something that leaders do every day in the course of their work, rather than something they send people away to go accomplish.
Exactly. It's in the natural flow of the organization. A lot of leadership development can be done in the natural flow of the organization. You just have to add what we talk about, a leadership lens, to many of the tasks that are happening. And once that occurs, you can start having some conversations that are really going to help people develop and grow on the fly, day in, day out.
Terrific.
Now, how about you? Where can people find your book, and what are you up to?
Well, I could say ditto to everything you said, and this is my first book, and so it's not yours. So I'm just following in the footsteps of other authors who have great business stuff out there. So yes, I have a Facebook page, Lead Start Book. I'm going to put links to all of this in the show notes for the podcast on weeklyleader.net. My book is on Amazon, 42 Rules for Your New Leadership Role, the manual they didn't hand you when you made VP, director, or manager. And yes, I'm really enjoying speaking on this. I'm going to be doing a webinar for HR.com. I'm going to be doing all sorts of stuff. I've started speaking with exec ed specifically about making a really strong start, and am happy to speak with a variety of companies and associations. So I think for either of us, if you're a listener who is excited about bringing this conversation to your organization, we'd be very happy to talk with you.
I agree.
And we are glad to put more into the conversation at Weekly Leader. We would very much enjoy your thoughts on this. So feel free to either record a little MP3. There's a link on the Weekly Leader site, and we can include your comments in a future podcast, or to add your comments directly to weeklyleader.net, or to reach either of us on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at PamFR. And for you, Scott?
I am at Alan, E-I-L.
Alan, E-I-L. Is that for Emotionally Intelligent Leadership?
You bet.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Scott.
Thank you, Pam. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Charity Chapman here, and you're listening to a track from my album.
Sometimes I'm brave as sin, sometimes I'm just a girl, always helping on a wish. Sometimes I'm ready to go, and then I shrink back, floating like a jellyfish. I try to be so